My mom grew up eating lard sandwiches. No meat or cheese, just lard on bread. As a teenager, I didn't understand why. We always had food. There were just some interesting combinations set before us, like rabbit with mashed potatoes, and we didn't know it was rabbit. Or spaghetti with meat that didn't taste like hamburger. But we never went without. In the kitchen one day, I pressed my mom about these mysterious lard sandwiches. I wanted to know why someone would eat that. My mom looked away and said, "Sometimes there was no food. Daddy drank it away." Learning this about my grandfather made me furious. But I didn't know the extent of their poverty until a few years ago when I was talking to my uncle's ex-wife. She told me a few of the things my grandma did to get money for a simple loaf of bread. She had 9 kids. Like how she would venture over to a neighbor's house and spend time behind the lilac bushes with the man of the house. And how she stole my uncle's government paychecks, courtesy of his time in Vietnam. He came home penniless. My mother, who lived through this dysfunction, inherited my grandmother's strained relationship with food, and she passed it on to me. There were times when Mom would tell us not to eat so much sugar, and then she'd bring home boxes of free scrap cookies from her job at Interbake Foods. And like I said, dinners were interesting. Pork cutlets, canned ham, Spam stir fry, and which was a specialty, by the way, and lots of dried mashed potatoes. Dad hunted and brought home rabbit, pheasant, and venison. Mom made Bisquick into bread, and canned salmon was a fancy attempt for her. And there was always Ovaltine at the table. I thought it was a treat. In reality, it masked the taste of dry powdered milk for my dad. To my mom's credit, she often served these meals with sliced apples and oranges, coupled with bowls of celery sticks, carrots, and radishes. The only time we ever had soda pop was on Christmas Eve. She tried hard to ensure her 3 children were somewhat healthy and well-fed. Yet, I found myself increasingly confused with food. As I got older, I began noticing more of my mom's odd behaviors with food, like hiding special cookies, peanut brittle, mixed nuts, and chocolates so she didn't have to share. I watched her eat lots of sweets and hate herself for it later. Above all, we weren't supposed to talk to anybody about what was going on in our house related to food or anything else for that matter. One big thing that didn't get talked about was my mom's stomach stapling surgery. I remember visiting her in the hospital, but not really knowing why she was there. It was the early 80s, and this procedure was the hot new fight against fat. After she returned home, it seemed like months went by before the surgery took effect. She wasn't instantly thin. In fact, it hurt her more than it helped. I was the one who cleaned the crusted blood off the large black staples spanning the length of her stomach. I was 10 years old. Later, Mom would tell me that she had the surgery for herself, but it was hard to ignore the fact that Dad used to tell her, "Betty, you're fat." My unhealthy eating habits showed up around the 9th grade. I developed a different kind of food insecurity, one in which I constantly worried about what was okay to eat versus what was not, what would make me fat. In high school, I almost fainted in the office of the driver's ed teacher because of an overload of diet pills and extremely low weight, 110 pounds on a 5'7" frame. I was not attractive, I was sickly, and my relationship with food only got worse. When I was 20, my dad reinforced my insecurities by telling me, "No man will want you if you're fat." I took this information and used it to my advantage because I had a problem. No matter how much I despised some of the guys I dated, I couldn't bring myself to end it, probably because I was so afraid of being alone. So I gained 20 pounds or more and hoped my bad boyfriends would break up with me. Then there were other times when I desperately wanted to look attractive, like when I spotted a man I admired sitting at the bar of a restaurant having lunch. I froze. I couldn't take another bite of my chicken broccoli Alfredo pasta because I didn't want this man to see me eating such a fattening meal. Over the years, I've worked to repair my relationship with eating, with food. But for me, it's a vicious cycle of continuous self-care, exercising and eating well, followed by periods of self-loathing and self-sabotaging, because that's a comfortable place to be. I am fully aware that food is fuel for your body and brain, but I still crave sugar. My current pattern is high waves of healthy eating among low tides of crappy food. Sometimes I'm embarrassed by my behavior. Other times I think, who cares? I've survived two experiences with breast and bone cancer. I'll eat what I want. Today, I can only say that I do my best to eat mindfully, nourish my body and mind with healthy, supportive foods, and maintain a low romance with sugar. I hope my mom is proud of me, watching over me, steering me into health. God knows I'm praying for release. Thank you.
Patty Strong shared her story at Ode's Garden Party in the summer. The special storytelling event was supported by the Siouxland District Health Department's Worksite Garden Program, which encourages employees to grow fresh fruits and vegetables where they work. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week,
I had successfully saved him from having to stomach some jello-based thing that rural Midwesterners try to pass off as salad.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. It's produced by Siouxland Public Media. Our next show is 7 p.m. Friday, February 2 at ISU Design West in downtown Sioux City. We'll be celebrating Ode's second anniversary. The theme is risk. Tickets are available at kwit.org. You can listen to past stories online and learn more about Ode on Facebook. The music you're hearing was played live by Devin Cadwell at the Garden Party. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.
Your eyes don't soar so you can't see what you want to someday be. Instead of wishing that you could face your fears, unwrite the tears that you cry, take back the breath that you sigh. It is not lost, for now don't consider the cost. Don't consider the cost. Mafia, stuck at our heels. So let's fly from this sinking ship before it kills. I'll swim to the shore, being crushed by the waves. I'll grab your hand so you don't float away. We'll wash up to some weary deserted place. I was an ass to assume. that you would be swarmed in this dingy study room. It's just been a wish of mine since the first day we met. So don't count me out just yet. Don't count me out just yet. Oh, don't count me out just yet. Don't count me out just yet. Out just yet. Out just yet. Out just yet. Out just yet.